7.
The Clockwork Girl. But helpless pieces of the game he plays upon this checkerboard of nights and days, hither and thither moves, and checks and slays. The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam, translated by Edward Fitzgerald, 1859. It had grown dark outside the Institute, and Sophie's lantern cast strange dancing shadows on the walls as she led Tessa down one flight of stone stairs after another. The steps were old, concave in the centers, where generations of feet had worn them down. The walls were roughly textured stone, the tiny windows set into them at intervals, giving way eventually to blankness that seemed to indicate that they had passed below ground. Sophie, Tessa said finally, her nerves rubbed raw by the darkness and silence. Are we going down into the church crypt, by any chance? Sophie chuckled, and the lights of the lantern flickered on the walls. It used to be the crypt, before Mr. Branwell had it fixed up into a laboratory for himself. He's always down there tinkering with his toys and his experiments. It doesn't half drive Mrs. Branwell wild. What's he making? Tessa nearly tripped over an uneven stair and had to grab for the wall to right herself. Sophie didn't appear to notice. All sorts of things, Sophie said, her voice echoing strangely off the walls. Inventing new weapons, protective gear for the shadow hunters. He loves clockwork and mechanisms and that sort of thing. Mrs. Branwell sometimes says she thinks he'd love her better if she ticked like a clock. She laughed. It sounds, Tessa said, as if you're fond of them. Mr. and Mrs. Branwell, I mean. Sophie said nothing, but the already proud set of her back seemed to harden slightly. Fonder of them than you are of Will, anyway, Tessa said, hoping to soften the other girl's mood with humor. Him, the disgust was plain in Sophie's voice. He's a bad sort, isn't he? Reminds me of the son of my last employer. He was proud, just like Mr. Herondale. And whatever he wanted, he got from the day he was born, and if he didn't get it, well. She reached up then, almost unconsciously, and touched the side of her face where the scar ran from mouth to temple. Then what? But Sophie's brusque manner was back. Then he'd be like to pitch a fit, that's all. Transferring her glowing lantern from one hand to the other, she peered down into the shadowy darkness. Be careful here, miss. The stairs can get awfully damp and slippery toward the bottom. Tessa moved closer to the wall. The stone was cold against her bare hand. Do you think it's simply because Will's a shadow hunter? She inquired. And they rather think they're superior, don't they? Jessamine, too. But Mr. Carstairs is not like that. He isn't at all like the others. And neither are Mr. and Mrs. Branwell. Before Tessa could say anything else, they came to an abrupt stop at the foot of the stairs. There was a heavy oak door there with a barred grill set into it. Tessa could see nothing through the grill but shadows. Sophie reached for the wide iron bar across the door and pushed it down hard. The door swung open onto an enormous, brightly lit space. Tessa moved into the room with wide eyes. This had clearly been the crypt of the church that had originally stood on this spot. Squat pillars held up a roof that disappeared into darkness. The floor was made up of great stone slabs darkened with age. Some were carved with words, and Tessa guessed that she stood on the gravestones, and the bones, of those who had been buried in the crypt. There were no windows, but the bright white illumination that Tessa had come to know as witch light shone down from brass fixtures fastened to the pillars. In the center of the room were a number of large wooden tables, their surfaces covered with all manner of mechanical objects, gears and cogs made of dully shining brass and iron, long strings of copper wire, glass beakers filled with liquids of different colors, some of them giving off wisps of smoke or bitter odors. The air smelled metallic and sharp, like the air before a storm. One table was entirely covered with a scatter of weapons, the blades shining under the witch light. There was a half-finished suit of what looked like thinly scaled metal armor, hanging on a wire frame by a great stone table whose surface was concealed by a lumpy cluster of thick woolen blankets. Behind the table stood Henry, and beside him Charlotte. Henry was showing his wife something he held in his hand, a copper wheel, perhaps a gear, and was speaking to her in a low voice. He wore a loose canvas shirt over his clothes like a fisherman's smock, and it was smeared with dirt and dark fluid. Still, what struck Tessa most about him was the assurance with which he spoke to Charlotte. There was none of his usual diffidence. He sounded confident and direct, and his hazel eyes, when he raised them to look at Tessa, were clear and steady. "Miss Gray, so Sophie showed you the way down here, did she? Very good of her." "Why, yes, she—" Tessa began, glancing behind her, but Sophie was not there. She must have turned at the door and gone soundlessly back up the stairs. Tessa felt foolish for not having noticed. "She did," she finished. "She said that you wanted to see me?"
"Indeed," Henry said. "We could use your help with something. Could you come over here for a moment?"
He gestured for her to join him and Charlotte by the table. As Tessa approached, she saw that Charlotte's face was white and pinched, her brown eyes shadowed. She looked at Tessa, bit her lip, and glanced down toward the table, where the heaped fabric moved. Tessa blinked. Had she imagined it? But no, there had been a flicker of movement. And now that she was closer, she saw that what was on the table was not so much a pile of fabric as fabric covering something. Something approximately the size and shape of a human body. She stopped in her tracks as Henry reached out, took hold of a corner of the fabric, and drew it away, revealing what lay beneath. Tessa, feeling suddenly dizzy, reached to grasp the edge of the table. Miranda. The dead girl lay on her back on the table, her arms flung out to either side, her dull brown hair straggling down around her shoulders. The eyes that had so unnerved Tessa were gone. Now there were hollow black sockets in her white face. Her cheap dress had been cut open down the front, baring her chest. Tessa winced, looked away, and then looked back quickly in disbelief. For there was no naked flesh and no blood, despite the fact that Miranda's chest had been sliced open down the front, her skin peeled back on either side like the skin of an orange. Beneath the grotesque mutilation gleamed the brightness of metal? Tessa moved forward until she was standing across from Henry at the table where Miranda lay. Where there should have been blood, torn flesh, and mutilation, there were only the two sheets of white skin folded back, and beneath them a carapace of metal. Sheets of copper, intricately fitted together, made up her chest, flowing smoothly down into a jointed cage of copper and flexible brass that was Miranda's waist. A square of copper, about the size of Tessa's palm, was missing from the center of the dead girl's chest, revealing a hollow space. "Tessa," Charlotte's voice was soft but insistent. "Will and Jem found this body in the house where you were kept. The house was completely empty except for her. She'd been left in a room alone." Tessa, still staring in fascination, nodded. "Miranda, the sister's maidservant. Do you know anything about her? Who she might be? Her history?" No, I thought... I mean, she hardly ever spoke, and then she only repeated things the sisters had said." Henry hooked a finger into Miranda's lower lip and pulled her mouth open. "She has a rudimentary metal tongue, but her mouth was never really constructed for speech or for consuming food. She has no gullet, and I would guess no stomach. Her mouth ends in a sheet of metal behind her teeth." He turned her head from side to side, his eyes narrowing. "But what is she?" Tessa asked. "A sort of downworlder or demon?"
"No,"
Henry let go of Miranda's jaw.
"She is not precisely a living creature at all. She's an automaton, a mechanical creature made to move and appear as a human being moves and appears. Leonardo da Vinci designed one. You can find it in his drawings, a mechanical creature that could sit up, walk, and turn its head. He was the first to suggest that human beings are only complex machines, that our insides are like cogs and pistons and cams made of muscle and flesh. So why could they not be replaced with copper and iron? Why couldn't you build a person? But this, Jacques Drou and Maya Day could never have dreamt of this. A true biomechanical automaton, self-moving, self-directing, wrapped in human flesh. His eyes shone. It's beautiful.
Henry, Charlotte's voice was tight, that flesh you're admiring, it came from somewhere. Henry passed the back of his hand across his forehead, the light dying out of his eyes.
Yes, those bodies in the cellar.
The Silent Brothers have examined them. Most are missing organs, hearts, livers. Some are missing bones and cartilage, even hair. We cannot but assume the Dark Sisters were harvesting these bodies for parts to create their mechanical creatures. Creatures like Miranda.
And the coachman, Tessa said. I think he was one as well. But why would anyone do such a thing?
There is more, Charlotte said. The mechanical tools in the Dark Sisters' cellar were manufactured by Mortmain and Company, the company your brother worked for.
Mortmain? Tessa tore her gaze from the girl on the table. You went to see him, didn't you? What did he say about Nate?
For a moment, Charlotte hesitated, glancing at Henry. Tessa knew that glance. It was the sort of glance people gave each other when they were preparing to engage in a joint falsehood. The sort of look she and Nathaniel had given each other once when they'd been concealing something from Aunt Harriet.
You're hiding something from me, she said. Where's my brother? What does Mortmain know?
Charlotte sighed. Mortmain is deeply involved in the occult underworld. He's a member of the Pandemonium Club, which seems to be run by downworlders.
But what does that have to do with my brother?
Your brother found out about the club and was fascinated by it. He went to work for a vampire named De Quincey, a very influential downworlder. De Quincey is, in fact, the head of the Pandemonium Club.
Charlotte sounded bitterly disgusted. There is a title to go with the job, it seems.
Feeling suddenly dizzy, Tessa braced her hand against the edge of the table.
The Magister?
Charlotte looked at Henry, who had his hand inside the creature's chest panel. He reached in and drew something out. A human heart, red and fleshy, but hard and shiny, looking as if it had been lacquered. It had been bound around with copper and silver wires. Every few moments it would give a listless thump. Somehow it was still beating.
Would you like to hold it? He asked Tessa. You'd have to be careful. These copper tubes wind throughout the creature's body, carrying oil and other flammable liquids. I have yet to identify them all.
Tessa shook her head.
Very well.
Henry looked disappointed.
There was something I wished you to see. If you'll simply look here.
He turned the heart carefully in his long fingers, revealing a flat metal panel on the opposite side of it. The panel had been etched with a seal, a large Q, a small D inside it.
De Quincey's mark, said Charlotte. She looked bleak. I've seen it before on correspondence from him. He's always been an ally of the Clave, or so I thought. He was there at the Accords when they were signed. He's a powerful man. He controls all the Night Children in the western part of the city. Mortmain says that De Quincey bought mechanical parts from him, and this would seem to bear that out. It looks as if you weren't the only thing in the Dark Sister's house that was being prepared for the Magister's use.
These clockwork creatures were as well.
If this vampire is the Magister, Tessa said slowly, then he is the one who had the Dark Sisters capture me, and he is the one who forced Nate to write me that letter. He must know where my brother is.
Charlotte almost smiled.
You are single-minded, aren't you?
Tessa's voice was hard.
Don't imagine that I don't want to know what the Magister wants with me.
why he had me captured and trained, how on earth he knew I had my ability, and don't think I wouldn't want revenge if I could have it. She took a shuddering breath. But my brother is all I have. I must find him. We will find him, Tessa, Charlotte said. Somehow all of this, the Dark Sisters, your brother, your own ability, and De Quincey's involvement, fits together like a puzzle. We simply haven't found all the missing bits of it yet.
I must say I hope we find them soon, Henry said, casting a sad glance at the body on the table. What could a vampire want with a lot of half-mechanical people? None of this makes any sense.
Not yet, said Charlotte, and she set her small chin. But it will.
Henry remained in his laboratory even after Charlotte had announced that it was past time for them to return upstairs for supper. Insisting that he would be along in 5 minutes, he waved them off absently as Charlotte shook her head.
Henry's laboratory, I've never seen anything like it, Tessa said to Charlotte when they were halfway up the stairs.
She was already out of breath, though Charlotte was moving with a steady, purposeful gait and looked as if she would never tire.
Yes, Charlotte replied a little sadly. Henry would spend all day and all night there if I allowed it. If I allowed it. The words surprised Tessa. It was the husband, wasn't it, who decided what was and was not allowed and how his home should be run? The wife's duty was simply to carry out his wishes and to provide him with a calm and stable refuge from the chaos of the world, a place he might retreat. But the Institute was hardly that. It was part home, part boarding school, and part battle station. And whoever might be in charge of it, it clearly wasn't Henry. With an exclamation of surprise, Charlotte stopped short on the step above Tessa.
Jessamine, what on earth's the matter?
Tessa looked up. Jessamine stood at the head of the stairs, framed in the open doorway. She still wore her day clothes, though her hair, now in elaborate ringlets, had clearly been arranged for evening, no doubt by the ever-patient Sophie. There was an immense scowl on her face.
It's Will, she said. He's being absolutely ridiculous in the dining room.
Charlotte looked puzzled.
How is this different from his being totally ridiculous in the library or the weapons room or any of the other places he's usually ridiculous?
Because, Jessamine said, as if this should be obvious, we have to eat in the dining room.
She turned and flounced off down the hallway, glancing back over her shoulder to make sure that Tessa and Charlotte were following her. Tessa couldn't help but smile.
It's a bit like they're your children, isn't it?
Charlotte sighed.
Yes, she said. Except for the part where they're required to love me, I suppose.
Tessa could think of nothing to say in reply to that. Since Charlotte insisted that there was something she had to do in the drawing room before supper, Tessa made her way to the dining room by herself. Once she had arrived there, quite proud of herself for not having lost her way, she found that Will was standing on one of the sideboards, tinkering with something attached to the ceiling. Jem was seated in a chair looking up at Will with a dubious expression.
It serves you right if you break it, he said, and inclined his head as he caught sight of Tessa.
Good evening, Tessa.
Following her stare, he grinned.
I was hanging the gasolier crookedly, and Will is endeavoring to straighten it.
Tessa could see nothing wrong with the gasolier, but before she could say so, Jessamine stalked into the room and shot a glare at Will.
Really? Can't you get Thomas to do that? A gentleman needn't—
Is that blood on your sleeve, Jessie?
Will inquired, glancing down. Jessamine's face tightened. Without another word, she turned on her heel and stalked to the far end of the table, where she set herself down in a chair and stared stonily ahead.
Did something happen while you and Jessamine were out?
It was Jem, looking genuinely worried. As he turned his head to look at Tessa, she saw something green gleam against the base of his throat. Jessamine looked over at Tessa, a look of near panic on her face.
No, Tessa began. It was nothing.
I've done it.
Henry entered the room triumphantly, brandishing something in his hand. It looked like a copper tube with a black button on one side.
I'll wager you didn't think I could, did you?
Will abandoned his efforts with the gasolier to glare at Henry.
None of us have the slightest idea what you're on about. You do know that.
I've gotten my phosphor to work at last.
Henry proudly brandished the object.
It functions on the principle of witch light, but is 5 times more powerful. Merely press a button and you will see a blaze of light the like of which you've never imagined.
There was a silence.
So, said Will finally, it's a very, very bright witch light then.
Exactly, Henry said.
Is that useful precisely? Jem inquired. After all, witch light is just for illumination. It's not as if it's dangerous.
Wait till you see it,
Henry replied. He held up the object.
Watch.
Will moved to object, but it was too late. Henry had already pressed the button. There was a blinding flare of light and a whooshing sound, and the room was plunged into blackness. Tessa gave a yelp of surprise, and Jem laughed softly.
Am I blind? Will's voice floated out of the darkness, tinged with annoyance.
I'm not going to be at all pleased if you've blinded me, Henry.
No, Henry sounded worried. No, the phosphor seems to... Well, it seems to have turned all the lights in the room off.
It's not supposed to do that? Jem sounded mild, as always.
Said Henry. No.
Will muttered something under his breath. Tessa couldn't quite hear him, but was fairly sure she caught the words Henry and fat-headed. A moment later, there was an enormous crash.
Will!
Someone cried out in alarm. Bright light filled the room, sending Tessa into a fit of blinking. Charlotte was standing in the doorway, holding a witchlight lamp aloft in one hand, and Will was lying on the floor at her feet in a welter of broken crockery from the sideboard.
What on earth?
I was trying to straighten the gasolier, Will said crossly, sitting up and brushing crockery bits off his shirt.
Thomas could have done that. And now you've gone and wrecked half the plates.
And much obliged to your idiot husband for that. Will looked down at himself. I think I've broken something. The pain is quite agonizing. You seem quite intact to me. Charlotte was remorseless. Get up. I suppose we'll be eating by witchlight tonight. Jessamine, down at the end of the table, sniffed. It was the first noise she'd made since Will had asked her about the blood on her jacket.
I hate witchlight. It makes my complexion look absolutely green.
Despite Jessamine's greenness, Tessa found she rather liked the witchlight. It laid a diffuse white glow over everything and made even the peas and onions look romantic and mysterious. As she buttered a dinner roll with a heavy silver knife, she couldn't help but think of the small apartment in Manhattan where she, her brother, and her aunt had eaten their meager suppers around a plain deal table by the light of a few candles. Aunt Harriet had always been careful to keep everything so scrupulously clean, from the white lace curtains at the front windows to the shining copper kettle on the stove. She had always said that the less you had, the more careful you had to be about everything you did have. Tessa wondered if the shadow hunters were careful about everything they had. Charlotte and Henry were recounting what they had learned from Mortmain. Jem and Will listened attentively while Jessamine gazed in boredom at the window. Jem seemed especially interested in the description of Mortmain's house, with its artifacts from all over the globe.
I told you, he said, Taipan.
They all think of themselves as very important men, above the law.
Yes, Charlotte said. He had that manner about him, as if he were used to being listened to.
Men like that are often easy marks for those who want to draw them into the shadow world. They are used to having power and expect to be able to get more power easily and with little cost to themselves. They have no idea how high the price for power in Downworld is. She turned, frowning to Will and Jessamine, who seemed to be quarreling about something in snappish tones.
What is the matter with you two?
Tessa took the opportunity to turn to Jem, who was sitting on her right side.
Shanghai, she said in a low voice. It sounds so fascinating. I wish I could travel there. I've always wanted to travel.
As Jem smiled at her, she saw that gleam again at his throat. It was a pendant carved out of dull green stone.
And now you have. You're here, aren't you?
I've only ever traveled before in books. I know that sounds silly, but... Jessamine interrupted them by slamming her fork down onto the table.
Charlotte, she demanded shrilly, make Will let me alone.
Will was leaning back in his chair, his blue eyes glittering.
If she'd say why she has blood on her clothes, I would leave her alone. Let me guess, Jessie. You ran across some poor woman in the park who had the misfortune of wearing a gown that clashed with yours, so you slit her throat with that clever little parasol of yours. Do I have it right?
Jessamine bared her teeth at him.
You're being ridiculous.
You are, you know, Charlotte told him.
I mean, I'm wearing blue. Blue goes with everything,
Jessamine went on.
Which really you ought to know. You're vain enough about your own clothes.
Blue does not go with everything, Will told her. It does not go with red, for instance.
I have a red and blue striped waistcoat,
Henry interjected, reaching for the peas.
And if that isn't proof that those two colors should never be seen together under heaven, I don't know what is.
Will, Charlotte said sharply, don't speak to Henry like that. Henry? Henry raised his head.
Yes?
Charlotte sighed. That's Jessamine's plate you're spooning peas onto, not yours. Do pay attention, darling. As Henry looked down in surprise, the dining room door opened and Sophie came in. Her head was down, her dark hair shining. As she bent to speak softly to Charlotte, the witchlight cast its harsh glow over her face, making her scar gleam like silver against her skin. A look of relief spread over Charlotte's face. A moment later, she had risen to her feet and hurried out of the room, pausing only to touch Henry lightly on the shoulder as she went. Jessamine's brown eyes widened.
Where's she going?
Will looked at Sophie, his gaze sliding over her in that way that Tessa knew was like fingertips stroking over your skin.
Indeed, Sophie, my dear. Where did she go?
Sophie shot him a venomous look.
If Mrs. Branwell had wanted you to know, I'm sure she would have told you, she snapped, and hurried out of the room after her mistress.
Henry, having set down the peas, attempted a genial smile.
Well then, he said, what was it we were discussing?
None of that, Will said. We want to know where Charlotte's gone. Did something happen?
No, Henry said. I mean, I don't think so.
He glanced around the room, saw four pairs of eyes fixed on him and sighed.
Charlotte doesn't always tell me what she's doing, you know that. He smiled a little painfully. Can't blame her, really. Can't count on me to be sensible.
Tessa wished she could say something to comfort Henry. Something about him made her think of Nate when he was younger, gawkish and awkward and easily hurt. Reflexively, she put up her hand to touch the angel at her throat, seeking reassurance in its steady ticking. Henry looked over at her.
That clockwork object you wear around your neck, might I see it for a moment?
Tessa hesitated, then nodded. It was only Henry, after all. She unhooked the clasp of the chain, drew off the necklace and handed it to him.
This is a clever little object, he said, turning it over in his hands. Where did you get it?
It was my mother's.
Like a sort of talisman,
he glanced up.
Would you mind if I examined it in the laboratory?
Oh, Tessa couldn't hide her anxiety. If you're very careful with it, it's all I have of my mother's. If it were broken...
Henry won't break or damage it, Jem reassured her. He's really very good with this sort of thing.
It's true,
said Henry, so modest and matter-of-fact about it that there seemed nothing conceited about the statement.
I'll return it to you in pristine condition.
Well, Tessa hesitated.
I don't see what the fuss is,
said Jessamine, who had looked bored throughout this exchange. It's not like it has diamonds in it. Some people value sentiment over diamonds, Jessamine. It was Charlotte standing in the doorway. She looked troubled.
There's someone here who wants to speak with you, Tessa.
With me? Tessa demanded, the clockwork angel forgotten for the moment.
Well, who is it? Will said.
Must you keep us all in suspense?
Charlotte sighed. It's Lady Belcourt. She's downstairs in the sanctuary room.
Now, Will frowned. Did something happen?
I contacted her, said Charlotte, about De Quincey, just before supper. I hoped she would have some information, and she does, but she insists on seeing Tessa first. It seems that despite all our precautions, rumors about Tessa have leaked into Downworld, and Lady Belcourt is interested. Tessa set her fork down with a clatter. Interested in what? She looked around the table, realizing that four pairs of eyes were now fixed on her. Who is Lady Belcourt? When no one replied, she turned to Jem as the likeliest to give her an answer. Is she a shadow hunter?
She's a vampire, Jem said.
A vampire informant, actually. She gives information to Charlotte and keeps us apprised of what's going on in the night community.
You needn't speak to her if you don't want to, Tessa, Charlotte said. I can send her away.
No, Tessa pushed her plate away. If she's well informed about De Quincey, perhaps she knows something about Nate as well. I can't risk her being sent off if she might have information. I'll go.
Don't you even want to know what she wants from you? Will asked.
Tessa looked at him measuredly. The witchlight made his skin paler, his eyes more intently blue. They were the color of the water of the North Atlantic, where the ice drifted on its blue-black surface like snow clinging to the dark glass pane of a window.
Aside from the Dark Sisters, I've never really met another Downworlder, she said.
I think that I would like to.
Tessa, Jem began, but she was already on her feet. Not looking back at anyone at the table, she hurried out of the room after Charlotte.